Mr. Jorgensen, good morning to you, but let's give everybody a moment to get in and out of the courtroom. That appears to have been accomplished, so you may proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. My name is John Jorgensen. I'm from the Lancaster County Public Defender's Office. I'm here today representing Stephen Shaw on his direct appeal from the sentence that was imposed in this particular case, especially concerning the post-release supervision order. Now, this is not the first time I've been before this court or had other cases docketed before the court in regards to the post-release supervision, and I understand that the court has thus far not been, unfortunately, swayed by my penological policy-type arguments, but I think that this case is artfully packaged sufficient to demonstrate the problems that we have in Lancaster County with the cookie-cutter justice system.
Let me ask you a question. Isn't perhaps an unspoken premise of your argument today that someone who is imprisoned in Nebraska on a Nebraska offense and is released on supervised release somehow has a right to depart the jurisdiction to go somewhere else? Isn't that the premise underlying your argument?
No, I think that misconstrues the notion. We're not asserting that there's a specialized right that is above that particular individual as opposed to other individuals who may already be from the state and remaining in the state. What the real issue is that we have an opportunity with this particular case to carry out a couple of different things. One, inject a sense of reasonableness to the orders that are being imposed upon people who are required to participate in post-release supervision. Inject a bit of compassion upon those same supervisees, as well as the notion that we need to carry out the legislative intent of LB 605 to transform the criminal justice system.
I misunderstand the facts of the case? Isn't this based upon your client going somewhere else?
It is. Yes, he's being sent to Kentucky. He's being extradited to Kentucky upon his release from incarceration here. Yes,
you speculate that he will be.
This is not a simple Trumpism where I say something and expect it to be true. This is something that is replete in the record from the PSI. And I know the state tries to disregard the entirety of this particular appeal by saying, let me quote them in their brief here, where they say that Shaw's argument is premised upon the assumption that he'll be extradited to another state upon his release from prison in Nebraska. Without any evidence in the record of the pending charges or an extradition order from Kentucky, this argument is speculative. And they go on to note but when you look at the PSI, again, this is not something where I just stood up and said something and expected it to be true. You look back at, there's the NCIC printout, there's the NCIC report where it notes the charge, the description, where he's going, where, for what reason. It's in the summary that the probation officer noted does have charges pending in the state of Kentucky and will be extradited there. It's identified by the probation officer under the specific need and risk factors, saying that the defendant does have outstanding charges pending in the state of Kentucky.
Will he be extradited when he's released from incarceration, or will he be extradited when he's completed?
The record doesn't speak to that, but that's why it's important to recognize how those kinds of cases are processed, like when someone is released on parole. They're paroled essentially to the other state. And so in this particular case, they're not going to wait until he's done with his supervision. They're going, once he's released from custody, then he's subject to the detainer that was levied by the state of Kentucky. He's removed there, and then we have the absurd result of him going to Kentucky, serving out whatever sentence he has to do there, and then any other state thereafter that he's also going to be extradited to for these various internet crimes in any other state that might want to also prosecute him for that. And then extraditing him back to the state of Nebraska for an abscond violation where he's failed to comply with the terms and conditions over here. What we need to do is interject a sense of reasonableness into these orders. If we know that someone is not going to be able to remain in this state, as identifying the specific risk and needs factors as well as 6-7 other different specific points in the PSI. There's in page 3, page 11, page 13, page 14, page 16, page 24, and page 29 in the PSI all make references to this individual is going to the state of Kentucky. We know that's where he's going. we know that that's where he's going, then it makes no sense to instill requirements that he remain in Lancaster County. Let's be mindful where this guy came from in the first place. He came from California. We extradited him here. He's never been in this state. Why are we going to require him to remain in this state? Why? So we can reintegrate him into a community that he's never been here? That's directly contrary to the purposes of what LB 605 was designed for. What we're trying to do in LB 605 is to transform the criminal justice system away from the notions of punishment. We need to focus on rehabilitative needs. And we're not rehabilitating by imposing conditions that are impossible to comply with. And so I think that the
possibility is that he completes all these sentences in all these different states, that his supervision could then be transferred to a state by the
Well, there's an open question as to whether or not a supervisee under post-release supervision would be fall under the interstate compact for parolees or probationaries. I think that that's an open question that we don't necessarily have, and whether or not that that's discretionary or whether it's mandatory. But we also have a problem of we're then expecting a pro se litigant who is incarcerated to file paperwork, to make a request, to have it transferred, when we've already identified what the problem is in the first instance. We know from the get-go, so let's fix the problem here, and instead of just imposing conditions upon every single individual that's appearing before the courts of Lancaster County to subject themselves to urinalysis testing 3 times a week, pay $25 a month for supervision fees, pay $5 a month for urinalysis testing, attend to pro-social activities every week, and before we go about instilling these same exact conditions on everybody who's being sentenced on post-release supervision, let's stop. Let's think about what is best for this individual, what is best for rehabilitating this individual. Let's not impose conditions requiring urinalysis testing if we don't have a demonstration that they have a drug or alcohol problem. Let's not require them to get an evaluation.
How recent does a DUI have to be?
I'm sorry?
How recent does a DUI have to be in someone's criminal history to impose terms of post-release supervision or probation related to?
Well, I think that the notion, if someone has a DUI on their record, that does not necessarily mean that they need to be subjected to your analysis testing. You would have to look at how long ago was that DUI offense.
How long ago is too long?
Well, I think that that would have to be something that the sentencing court could evaluate, as opposed to just simply imposing these particular terms and conditions on an individual. I think
the sentencing court didn't even.
Because there was no indication, there was no recitation that was what had occurred in this particular case. What we have is just simply that the individual has to do all of these different things because that's what's imposed on each and every case.
Do you object to the condition like alcohol use and testing in the trial court?
Yes. At that point in time, we were familiar with the Christian Phillips case, and we did note the notion that this individual is going to Kentucky and so he's not going to be able to comply with these certain things. And we invited the trial court at that point in time to fashion the sentence that such that it was capable of being served in another state while incarcerated, such as maybe no law violations or something of that nature, so that the terms
will
and
you
conditions
have an opportunity, or will your client have an opportunity to revisit post-release supervision at the time that he is leaving Nebraska's facilities?
Will he have another opportunity to revisit? Yes, any party at any time, as the court is aware, can file with the trial court. But the problem with that then is, as we've already seen in Christian Phillips Part 2, if the individual has already lapsed the term of their supervision, they have no meaningful review to any denial of that revisitation. So if a person files paperwork, assuming that that pro se individual has the capacity and capabilities and knows where to file and to whom to address it to and can carry out the necessary portions of that statutory requirements to present that for review, and if they are then denied any sort of adjustment, then they're left without any sort of meaningful review. So I think it's better to note especially in this particular case, where we recognize the problem the upfront. We can fix it now. That's where it needs to be addressed, rather than relying, oh, well, maybe we can take care of it later and so everything's okay. No, we've clearly identified the problem. We need to fix it. And so it is with that we would request that the court determine that the trial court in this particular case abuses discretion by exercising no discretion whatsoever and imposing a cookie-cutter type sentence, and would also ask that the court consider the possibility of not requiring my client to reappear in front of the trial court to be informed that he is no longer required to abide by any of these terms and conditions. I see I'm out of time here. If I may conclude this.
You may conclude your thoughts.
Thank you, because now since he's been extradited to Kentucky, it would seem to be silly to require him to reappear back in the state of Nebraska so that he can be informed that he's no longer required to adhere to these terms and conditions. So I would thank the court for your time today. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Meyer, good morning to you.
Good morning.
May it please the court, my name is Joe Meyer. I'm an assistant attorney general here on behalf of the appellee of the state of Nebraska. The state submits that the district court did not abuse its discretion in imposing the terms of post-release supervision. The court sentenced, as this court knows, court sentenced appellant to 20 conditions of post-release supervision. He, in his brief, objected to 13 of those, five which relate to his use of his ability to use drugs and alcohol, and then eight others that appellant says are impossible or hard or extremely difficult to him to comply with because he will be extradited to Kentucky. I believe the state's position is outlined pretty well in my brief.
Has he in fact been extradited at this point, or do we know?
I do not know that that's in the record, Your Honor. He was sentenced to the maximum 2-year sentence, so I do not know. I think picking up on questions to opposing counsel, I would point out that there are opportunities to modify post-release supervision. Pretty much, I think state statute treats someone who's under post-release supervision pretty similar to a probationer. They can be discharged pursuant to Section 29-2263. The probation or post-release supervision can be transferred pursuant to 29-2265. That can be done on the probationer's motion, on the court's own motion, on a probation officer's motion.
Transferred to Kentucky, for example.
I believe so, Your Honor, yes.
If the objections are the same ones that were made at the imposition of the sentence, what would be the best procedural route for a defendant?
Well, I think a defendant, if he does in fact become extradited to Kentucky, would be to motion the court and ask for a transfer or discharge from post-release supervision.
So at some point, the defendant would have to await an impossibility and bring that to the court's attention?
Yes, I think so.
Rather than just repeatedly saying, these conditions don't really relate to my charges, and just regurgitating it.
Yes, and I think appellant's argument is that the conditions don't relate to the charges, but as I hopefully did in my brief, I like to point out that that's not the standard. The standard is state statute requires the court to impose conditions which are reasonably likely to allow the offender to lead a law-abiding life. And as Justice Stacey pointed out, the offender does, in this case, have a DUI. It's, I believe, it's from 1989, so it's close to 15 years old, a little bit more than 15 years old, but in line with the Mosley case from the 8th Circuit, that is perfect.
Third year.
Yes,
30
correct.
Years too long?
25, yeah, I should have known that. I don't think so. I think, he...
He had a DUI 30 years ago, so when he's released, he should be in do anti-drinking things.
Yes, because okay. He...
How about the drugs? What's the drug history have?
I don't know of a mention of drug history. I will point out that the pre-sentencing investigation, the appellant mentioned that he did start drinking at age 18. So I think...
That's an answer to a different question. What's the record show about his drug history?
I think it's minimal, if there at all.
I see. But there's conditions, is that right, in the 20 conditions that are anti-drug habits?
Yes. I mean, okay. Drug use is illegal, and there's a general term that he should not violate the law, so I don't
does
think...
Does the PSI make recommendations about drugs and alcohol to the judge?
I didn't examine it that close, Your Honor, so I would defer to the court's examination of the pre-sentence for that question.
What do you think is the limit on the post-supervision conditions?
Well, I think...
If it's designed to make you law-abiding and avoid trouble...
I think district courts need to be given a wide latitude on this issue, and that's reflected by the standard of review.
But I was going to say wide latitude, and I think Justice Stacey's saying, well, how do we know the judge didn't exercise discretion? It may happen to be the same 20 with every defendant that cruises through, but maybe that's appropriate. Maybe it's not.
Yeah, I think it's just generally generally basically an excessive sentence argument here. And in excessive sentence cases, this court gives the district court wide deference and says the district court was the one who knew the facts of the case, who the defendant stood in front of the district court, and the district court, unless it's an abuse of discretion, which I think the court's well aware of the standard there, that it's a miscarriage of justice, basically, then there's no evidence in the record to support these conditions, and I think...
Well, what if, in this case, there's no evidence in the record that there was any kind of drug abuse? Is that an abuse of discretion?
I don't believe so, because, probation or post-release supervision is meant to allow an offender to lead a law-abiding life, and,
Is there anything that suggests that his history of theft was driven by a drug addiction? Anything in the pre-sentence investigation that suggests that?
I'm not sure, Your Honor. I didn't review the pre-sentence before the argument, so I apologize for that, but I think it's pretty common sense to know that a lot of people steal to feed drug and alcohol habits. I don't know, at what point the...
Or avarice.
Yes. So, and I make mention in my brief that, the state is eager for this court's guidance on these situations. The court anticipated that Phillips would be the first case to speak upon post-release supervision. It did not, maybe entirely, because Phillips was decided on the waiver issue. So the state is looking forward to guidance on these issues. How to treat an offender that does not reside in Nebraska and is brought to Nebraska to face these convictions. I think at that point, the legislative intent of 605 and the whole legislative intent of post-release supervision to have minimal incarceration time, but then also a very stringent probation situation. How do we handle that situation with out-of-state offenders?
What does the state do with probationers? Isn't post-release supervision under our legislature scheme simply a form of probation?
I believe so, Your Honor.
So what do we do with the compacts now? If a probationer is extradited, what happens?
I don't know. I did not really review the extradition laws. I haven't been, with the Attorney General's office.
And that strikes me as what the real question here is, and I don't think either side is addressing that question. The one side seems to be, well, we shouldn't use any of the tools of probation, which seems to me, with all due respect, to be somewhat of a nonsensical argument, and the state's response seems to be, we're not going to worry about it. That's not our department. And that also seems to me to be a nonsensical response. So what should we be doing?
Well, I think as long as he's under post-release supervision, he's under the jurisdiction of the state and under the jurisdiction of the Department of Corrections. So I think Department of Corrections
the Department of Corrections?
The probation parole, correct. Yes. So I think as long as he's under post-release supervision, he's under Nebraska. He's still serving his sentence. And I don't see why the state of Nebraska would allow him to be extradited to another state while he's still serving his sentence. But as far as an examination of extradition laws, I apologize. I didn't go into that.
All right. Thank you.
So For those reasons, the court anticipates the court's decision in this case, or the state anticipates the court's decision in this case, and we ask that you affirm the judgment of the district court. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have time for rebuttal? There is no time for rebuttal. Our next case of the day is Pan versus IOC Realty Specialist, Inc. Mr.